Verses 1 through 12 in the Common English Bible. My brothers and sisters, not many of you should become teachers, because we know that we teachers will be judged more strictly. We all make mistakes often, but those who don't make mistakes with their words have reached full maturity. Like a bridled horse, they can control themselves entirely. When we bridle horses and put bits in their mouths to lead them wherever we want, we can control their whole bodies. Consider ships. They are so large that strong winds are needed to drive them. But pilots direct their ships wherever they want with a little rudder. In the same way, even though the tongue is a small part of the body, it boasts wildly. Think about this. A small flame can set whole forests on fire. The tongue is a small flame of fire, a world of evil at work in us. It contaminates our lives entirely. Because of it, the circle of life is set on fire. The tongue itself is set on fire by the flames of hell. People can tame and already have tamed every kind of animal, bird, reptile, and fish. No one can tame the tongue, though. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it, we both bless the Lord, the Father, and curse human beings made in God's likeness. Blessing and cursing come from the same mouth. My brothers and sisters, it just shouldn't be this way. Both fresh water and salt water don't come from the same spring, do they? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree produce olives? Can a grapevine produce figs? Of course not. And fresh water does not flow from a salt water spring either. Holy words for holy people.
Thanks be to God. All right, I'm showing this on. I'm not hearing anything. Maybe we need the volume adjusted back there, Dave. Okay, I like this slide. Can a fig tree produce olives? I don't know, I just had fun playing with PowerPoint. And if we're not having fun, what's the point, right? If we're not having fun, what's the doggone point? All right, well, it was just over a year ago. It was right after Tiffany and I moved to Seattle, and we were still living at Larry and Julie's house. Actually, we were living in Larry and Julie's driveway in an RV. But we were living in Kent in the RV, waiting for the parsonage to come available. This is still June. We were finding some interesting things to do. And as long as we were down there on the south side, there is a guitar factory in Puyallup. There are actually two. There used to be one, and then a bunch of disgruntled employees got mad at their boss and moved across town and built another one. And that's the one that I toured. USA Custom Guitars is a place in Puyallup, Washington, that takes, lumber and turns it into bodies and necks for electric guitars. And it had this magical thing of making both Tiffany and me happy, because Tiffany likes factories and I like guitars. Right? So how could that be more perfect? So we go and we watch them take this stuff and make guitar parts out of it. And you walk away with an appreciation of the skill and craftsmanship and artistry, really, that these folks have. Because I've always wanted to have the tools and the skill and the know-how to take some wood and turn it into a musical instrument, make something beautiful out of it. I've wanted to build a Telecaster out of an old church pew. for 20 years, I have acquired zero of the tools and zero of the skill set in order to make that happen, but I've always kind of wanted to. You know what I'm saying? And it's astounding to watch these folks work with these highly specialized tools. And they take these pieces of ordinary looking wood, and with the right tools and the right measurements and the right cuts and the proper sanding, it goes from a very ordinary looking piece of wood to something beautiful and functional. And yet, when you are in the presence of such powerful tools, you're also aware of how dangerous they are. This is a factory. This is where people work. So there are specific safety precautions that they have to take in order to work with these tools. They can build something beautiful, but if you're not careful with them, they can be destructive. Just like that thing that sits between our noses and our chins. Our noses and our chins sit right around our mouths, and our mouths can be incredibly beautiful and constructive and wonderful, and we can do great things. I mean, how many times can you listen to Martin Luther King give the I Have a Dream speech? I can listen to it over and over and over. How many times can you sit through the narration in A Christmas Story? How many times can you listen to a favorite comedy album? How many times can you listen to something that you find inspiring or delightful? All done with the human mouth. And how many times have you been in a room where somebody, maybe even you, opens their big mouth and you go, "Oh man, get me out of here." I have been in a room with people who open their mouths and I go, "Oh my, do I even know you?" And how embarrassed am I to be in a room with you having said that? Oh! And how many times have we opened our mouths and realized we just cut the person we were talking to? It happens. It happens. The mouth is a tool that can be used for crafting something beautiful and building something up. It is also a tool that, if misused, can cause great harm and injury. And that's what James is talking about here in this passage. James is talking about how wonderful and dangerous the tongue can be. How wonderful and dangerous the mouth can be. He said, out of the same mouth. Yeah, I do like the Rolling Stones. Out of the same mouth can come blessings and curses. And then he says it shouldn't be this way. And then he goes on with a couple of metaphors, like, can a fig tree produce olives? Can salt water and fresh water flow from the same well, from the same stream? And James gets misread. And part of why James gets misread is because we read
the Bible in these little chunks and passages. I took a class on the Gospel of Mark in seminary, and the first lesson in the Gospel of Mark class was, everyone calls Mark the discipleship gospel, because if you read the pericopes, if you read these little chunks, they all seem to be about discipleship. But if you read Mark from beginning to end as one book, you don't get discipleship. You get God breaking into reality and messing things up for the good and then departing. That God intervenes in the world, ripping through space and time in the form of a human being who comes in and disrupts the church and disrupts the government and gets crucified and resurrects. When we read things in small chunks, we get meaning out of it, but when we read things as a whole, we get something else out of it. And James often gets tacked with this works righteousness bit, right? And you read little chunks of James, and it sounds like works righteousness. It sounds like this passage is telling us that we need to learn to control our mouths. We need to learn to control the tongue. We need to learn to fix this, and it's up to us to do it. But if you read James as a whole, you get all the way to the end. He never says, it's on you to fix this. The end of the book of James gives one solution to all this stuff, and that solution is prayer. It's not up to us to fix it. It's up to us to pray so that God can fix it. You see, folks who say that he has a conflict with Paul because Paul is all about, you know, God's transforming power and what God does for you and how God justifies us whether we like it or not. And God, through grace and faith, takes care of all of this stuff, and it's not up to us. And James preaches works righteousness. There is no conflict here. James offers the same solution that Paul would. Give it to God. Pray. Let God do God's thing with you. He's not giving us a solution here. He's giving us a diagnosis. James is giving us a diagnosis that if blessings and curses both come out of your mouth, then you haven't reached spiritual maturity yet. And if you want to reach spiritual maturity, pray. He doesn't say you haven't reached spiritual maturity, so grow up. He says you haven't reached it, so pray. And if you read the last chapter of James, it is pray for yourself, but pray for one another as well. It's to be a part of a community of faith who are all praying for and with one another so that we can all be transformed and we can all move towards spiritual maturity, because arm locked in arm, hand locked in hand, eyes cast toward heaven, we can get there. We can get there. But we can't do it by our own self-control. We can't do it by our own volition. We can't do it just by choosing to do it. Let's face it. If we could get there by just choosing to do it, we'd all choose to do it. If it was that simple, everyone would do it. But it's not. It's find some companions for the journey and put your trust in God. One of the things that I was taught about preaching is that every passage you read, the first question you ask yourself is, where is the good news in this? Where's the good news in this? Where's the gospel here? How is the gospel being preached in this passage? And I'll tell you the truth. Reading through this passage as it is outlined, as it is demarked, it's not easy. It sounds critical. It sounds like we're supposed to straighten up and fly right, like we're supposed to fix this. The gospel is found in the whole of James. The gospel is found in the whole of God's goodness. The gospel is found in our relationship with God and with Christ, the one who transforms us. James would absolutely agree with Paul that self-control is not something that you just choose. It is a spiritual gift. Which means it doesn't come from yourself. It comes from somewhere else. Our self-control is a gift. It comes with maturity. And the maturity that comes with being in relationship with God and with one another. I remember being at church camp when I was a kid, and the pastor was talking about our prayer lives using marriage as a metaphor. Or more of a simile. I'm better with simile than metaphor. But I'm really good at personification. But that our relationships start with a wooing and a courtship. And they come with an awkward phase of getting to know one another. And then they come with getting on cruise control. And then it ends up with an older couple who have been married for a long time who don't even have to talk anymore. They can just look at each other lovingly and something is communicated. Spiritual maturity comes with being in and participating in the relationship over time. That prayer begins with God wooing us into a relationship. That it begins with an awkward phase of you and God getting to know each other and learning how to talk to God and learning what prayer is like and learning how to be still and listen. And then it can end up later with a few deep breaths basking in God's presence. Just simply being. So while Washington Irving was right, the great Washington Irving said, the tongue is the only tool that gets sharper with use. There's something profound in that. We can, with maturity, find ourselves being craftspersons, artists. But it's not on us to just make it happen. With prayer, with community, with leaning on God and leaning with each other, we find ourselves maturing and growing and using sharp tools to make beautiful and useful things. I think there's good news in there somewhere. I think there's gospel in there somewhere. Let's be community. And grow together. Amen and amen. As we ponder what James has to teach us, Let's sing The Lone Wild Bird. That's number 2052 in the Black Hymnal. I don't know this song. I don't know if you know this song. So it may be awkward, it may be good.